This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brisky,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
I think no surprise to anybody, Rex Huerman's name being brought up in connection with other potential murders from Gilgo Beach. There's been a lot of time and investigation that has been continuing to go on to try and link him. And it appears we may have some more links now. Karen Vergata is one of them. In 1996, Vergata's remains were found on Fire Island, where passersby found her legs wrapped in plastic. For years, she was known as Fire Island Jane Doe. In 2011, her skull was found along Ocean Parkway. Her remains were then later linked together later that year, and eventually DNA helped identify exactly who she was. But still, we had no idea what happened to her for all those years. She was just another one of the victims. Valerie Mack, another one, vanished in 2000 while living in Philadelphia. Mutilated remains found strewn across Long Island, including along Ocean Parkway. So these murders, I guess, in this sense, they break the mold a little bit of what we saw with Rex Huerman on the other three that he is accused of being a part of. But does that necessarily mean that he's not a part of these? Could he have just, if it is him, changed up his way of handling how he kills people, considering these are all in that same area? These were all believed to be sex workers at the time. I'm guessing there's going to be far more than just these two. But we're going back to the late 90s, early 2000s on these murders, again, putting it back into the same timeline. Do you think we are now beginning to identify and surely identifying some of the victims of Rex Huerman?
Yeah, potentially. I'm hoping that it's a DNA linkage that they have found here, genetic linkage in some way, because otherwise it's going to be hard because there's no link analogy. I'm trying to look for the right word that the profilers use, but link analysis, that's it. The link analysis on methodologies and the way the bodies are left by serial killers, there's always a link analysis. And if you can't do it, we're going to hopefully have a genetic analysis and genetic linkage here because, serial killers evolve. But once they lock on to the fantasy that they're going to lock onto for a while, that's when it becomes extremely consistent. But if this was an earlier version of it, or maybe an evolved version of it, kind of depends on the timeline, it could be linked. It's like you said, though, it wasn't originally linked because the methodology for leaving the bodies is different than the four that we know of. And so we'll see. I'm hopeful, though. Technology is both a hindrance and a beautiful thing for us. And hopefully in a lot of these cases, we're getting some more genetic and DNA testing that's going to hopefully bring some resolution to the families.
I think the interesting thing that we keep seeing about some of these is that they occurred so long ago, early 2000s, late 90s. Is that common for a serial killer, if Rex Huerman is a serial killer, to take a break like that or just all out stop? I mean, I'm wondering if he really truly did ever stop. In fact, he did do these things, and we just have yet to piece other crimes together in either the same area or other areas.
Yeah, so they might take a break from the killing itself, but the reason behind the killing is the fantasization they have, and a lot of it is through is to produce a sexual release of some sort. And so that's why they stage bodies. That's why they take photographs. That's why they take trophies of things so they can relive that moment again and again until that fantasization is no longer strong enough and they have to kill again. And so, and then I'm trying to remember the serial killer, actually it might've been even BTK that took that break knowing it. So he actually knew what to substitute in for a period of time so he could actually make a time gap. Because what you're seeing is, and it would fit with Huerman if he actually is indeed the murderer here, it's in order to hide that long, huge amount of intelligence. We're seeing some murderers these days that we've covered that we're seeing low intelligence, and they're just, that's why they're caught so fast and so easily, even though nothing's a open and shut case on these things, they trip up a lot easier because they're just not intellectually as capable. You know, someone like Huerman with the degrees he has as an architect and all these things, he's a smart guy. BTK was also very smart about what he did and how he did it. Very studied, very researched, lots of reps. And so that goes into how they do it. And also, I think we're seeing bodies from this time period because it's hard for even the most intelligent killer and serial killer or whatever to plan out what technology is going to be able to do 15, 20, 30 years in the future. And so all their strategizing to hide themselves and to cover their tracks is based on what they know today, mm-hmm. and or maybe what they're hearing conjecture will be what we can do tomorrow, but be able to project that out even further, incapable. So that's why I think we're seeing these things.
What sparks someone like this? I mean, we know, I'm thinking back to Dennis Rader, he loved the attention. He got a real kick out of that. The letters that he would write to local news media, to the police, playing that cat and mouse game. He really liked doing that. We don't really necessarily have a lot of that we know of with Huerman. We have those allegations of likely that he called the victim's family and taunted them a bit, but it wasn't played out in the media. It was more like a personal torture. What sparks people who stop in doing something like this to come back? Why, if you've gotten away with it for all that time, it's been calm. Granted, you had the desire to do it once. What brings that back in someone so many years later?
It's an attention-grabbing thing, the grandiosity. So those that have the higher level of the psychopathy going, they need to be that grandiose person. They need to push the edge. Their dopamine need is so high that they're going to constantly be on the edge of crazy doing. And I think it might have even been on Jeffrey Dahmer. Didn't he put a severed head in a body in LA and walk around the streets with a severed head in his back, you know, like on him to kind of test the world around him? Hey, do you see this crazy? And no one did. I worked a case in the Bureau as well. We actually had a psychopath who wasn't diagnosed by me. So one of my team members who's a licensed clinician diagnosed him as a psychopath. He's an espionage subject. But instead of killing people, he was a serial taker of money. He was excellent at taking people's money. I mean, think of Alex Murdaugh, mm-hmm. that kind of guy was being able to take people's money. And the way he got his thrill and excitement was he would actually put $1 million in cash in an attaché case, walk into a dive bar in the worst part of town, set the thing down by itself by the door, and go and start doing shots of Jägermeister and beer at the bar just for the thrill to see if anyone would take that case and what he was going to do about it.
It's
the excitement that they crave and need, and that attention and pushing the edge in the envelope. And so they're, again, it's that fantasization going on in their brain.
It is. And there's those extreme type behaviors like that. Granted, that was not with murder, but that was with money. Are there, if someone does know someone or witnesses kind of extreme, kind of bizarre behavior like that, but they're getting a thrill out of it, is that a sign that there may be something more going on with that person beyond just what they're publicly exhibiting?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I got a couple of friends that are good profilers. As a matter of fact, I just interviewed one on my show, Jana Monroe. She was the first female in part of the behavioral sciences unit of the FBI, worked for John Douglas. She's phenomenal. And she even says it too. If they had made or can make a great checklist that if we could figure out who serial murderers are before they become serial murderers or even during,
yeah,
we wouldn't have any serial murder. So just because someone has abnormal or abnormal is even a very challenging word to use.
Very generic word almost.
It's context-based. And so a lot of times we can see someone that has a behavior that doesn't fit the context of their environment that they're currently living in. But if you take that behavior and put it over here, oh, it's completely normal over here. Because normal actually depends on the context in which you're living. Mm-hmm. We want to not focus necessarily on normal or abnormal behavior because that's context-based. I'd like to focus more on healthy and unhealthy behavior.
Okay.
And that comes down to how we treat others, how we see them responding to stress. Mm-hmm. And if we see them responding with unhealthy behavior when responding to stressful situations, or they have, like you're inclinating right there, a higher need for excitement and a dopamine release, and that's the quick feel-good drugs that we get when we're doing exciting things, comes also from eating spicy food. So
everybody eats spicy. We won't have serial killers anymore.
A lot of times they'll do that. It's also abnormal sexual behavior, drinking too much, drugs, riding fast motorcycles, flying planes. All these things create a longer gene for dopamine to hit. So we need to do all those things. And so, again, the linkages on the science between that and serial killers, not quite sure. But again, it's that fantasization that they need. And so if you're seeing some of the higher need for these things, just ask yourself, are they doing healthy things to satisfy this need?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, instead of killing people or instead of doing drugs or over drinking, maybe they become marathon runners, or maybe they spend all their time serving their community or taking all that energy that they have that they need to get out. Mm-hmm. Are they doing something healthy with it? That's what healthy people do. They channel that energy. They channel that need for the pleasure seeking in a healthy direction.
As we always say when we see these things like this, especially where it's very intricate, a lot of energy, a lot of planning put into things. And like, had you used that for something positive, my God, like what you could be today, but instead you're over here accused of murdering all of these people.
And a large thing to look at too, and Jana talked about this when I was just chatting with her, is, we got to look at that upbringing. Anytime you see someone doing an unhealthy behavior in life, whether it's treating someone poorly, treating a waitress at a restaurant poorly, or yelling at their neighbor all the way up to murdering someone, it's, what kind of behavior spike are you seeing? And what was their trauma that they experienced earlier in life that caused that behavior to manifest itself today? Because no one is just all of a sudden pops and goes from 0 to 100. All right, I'm just going to lose my crap today. And from this day forward, I'm a horrible person. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't happen that way. When I see someone doing something unhealthy, the first thing that strikes me is what happened in this person's life at those formative years. We have the nature part and then we have the nurture part. What happened during the nurture part, those formative years, that gave them this sense of unsafety that they feel they have to overcompensate now to make up for that?
Want to listen ad-free? Want advance access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.